Deutsche Welle. Africa Link.
Welcome to DW's Africa Link program, live from our studios here in Bonn, Germany. I'm Isaac Mugabe.
And I'm Eunice Wanjiro. On today's program, Kenyan police fire tear gas at opposition protesters rallying in Nairobi on Friday, calling for the removal of election board officials.
What we demand now, Jaloba must go.
No election.
There is no election.
Jaloba must go. Jaloba must go.
And the International Campaign to Abolish Nuclear Weapons has been awarded this year's Nobel Peace Prize, and this is why.
The organization is receiving the award for its work to draw attention to the catastrophic humanitarian consequences of any use of nuclear weapons.
These are some of the stories we've lined up for you.
But first, let's listen to what's been happening around the world.
My name is Jen Nyinge with DW News. This year's Nobel Peace Prize has been awarded to a little-known international campaign group, ICAN, advocating for a ban on nuclear weapons. The Norwegian Nobel Committee says this is in line with warning of a rising risk of nuclear war, especially amid current tensions between the US and North Korea. Germany is among many countries and organizations that have praised the decision to award ICAN, as Rainer Braun, spokesperson in German Foreign Ministry, explains.
It's a wonderful commitment which these women and men pursue every day. And we are happy that the Nobel Prize Committee does not always honor state players, but also the commitments of civil society. We welcome that very much.
Zimbabwean embassy in South Africa has withdrawn from a case involving President Robert Mugabe's wife, citing threats made against its lawyer. Grace Mugabe is accused of assaulting a 20-year-old model in Johannesburg after she found her in a hotel room with one of her two sons who live in South Africa. Meanwhile, the president's wife has hit back at claims by the country's vice president that his ice cream was laced with poison at a ruling party political event. The vice president is her main rival to succeed her husband, Robert Mugabe. Moving on, the U.S. government has expressed concerns about the worsening political environment in Kenya. Today, police clashed with the opposition protesters in the capital, Nairobi, calling for the sacking of the election body officials involved in August a nullified presidential vote in which Uhuru Kenyatta had been declared the winner. Other cities that witnessed protests are Mombasa and Kisumu, which are opposition strongholds, and some of them were bitter with the way they were handled by the security forces.
Coming to fight against NASA supporters, that is not right. And we are telling Bwana Uhuru, wherever he is, he should know that we are all Kenyans. And the votes he is requesting from Kenyans will never get a vote from NASA supporter. Big is Kenya, and Kenya is bigger than him. Kenya is bigger than Uhuru.
You are listening to DW, Germany's international broadcaster. Spain's government has approved a decree that would make it easier for the companies in Catalonia to move the location of the official registration out of the region. The move will allow the relocation of Spain's third largest bank by assets before next week when separatist authorities in Catalonia want to declare independence. The UN has warned that hundreds of thousands more Rohingya Muslims could flee Myanmar. The world body has also called as unacceptable the level of access granted by Myanmar to the heart of the refugee crisis. And now to your sports, and the International Olympic Committee has suspended Brazil, a national Olympic body, over the alleged involvement in a vote-buying scandal. The committee also announced its decision will not affect Brazilian athletes eligible for the 2018 Winter Olympics. For more news and information, visit our website, dw.com. My name is Jen Nyinge.
You're listening to Africa Link. I'm Eunice Njuro.
And I'm Isaac Mugabe, and we are live on Facebook. And for those just wanting to tune in, just leave your comments, DW Africa, and we always read them live here on air. We begin the program today in Kenya, where police fired tear gas at opposition supporters rallying in Nairobi, calling for the removal of election board officials they blame for August's cancelled presidential vote. The confrontation in the capital occurred as demonstrations got underway in the country's other major cities for the second time this week. The rerun of the August 8th vote is currently scheduled for October 26th, but the opposition is threatening a boycott if the officials from the Electoral Commission are not removed. From Nairobi, James Shimanyula sent this report.
The demonstrations were mainly held in places where opposition leader Raila Odinga commands a large number of supporters in the coastal region, as well as the western part of the country on Lake Victoria. Here in the capital, Nairobi, the demonstration took place in the city center and areas considered to be Odinga's strongholds.
What we demand now, Chiloba must go.
There's no election.
There is no election.
Odinga has repeatedly asserted that no election will be held until nearly a dozen top officials of the Electoral Commission, including their chief executive officer, Ezra Chiloba, resign or removed from office. Odinga accuses them of playing a pivotal part in committing irregularities and illegalities during August the 8th presidential election, which was nullified by the country's Supreme Court. Meanwhile, Chiloba's colleague, Electoral Commission's chairman Wafula Chebukati, was at a hotel on the outskirts of Nairobi to train officials expected to oversee the repeat election on the 26th of this month.
We have a full team of 290 returning officers, deputies, ICT staff. We have been told where we went wrong in terms of processes. We want to get it 100%.
Speaking about the new electoral laws that are about to be passed by Parliament, Chebukati pointed out this factor.
Parliament will have the right to make laws. We can't stop them. But we hope whatever they do or make should not affect the processes we have put in place.
James Shimanyula with that report. We apologize for the quality of the clips in that report.
Now, Isaac, we asked our listeners on Facebook and WhatsApp, is the opposition playing delay tactics or are this protest justified? And a WhatsApp user from Cameroon, he didn't tell us his name, he says, I think Raila Odinga wants to win the upcoming elections by all means, owing to the fact that this might be his last chance. It would be more frustrating for him and supporters to lose again.
David from Kenya said, sorry, the opposition has a hidden agenda. We are in a crisis.
And Tasang Wilfred from Cameroon is saying, of course, the protests are justified. They had to repeat the election because the Electoral Commission did a bad job. The only way to be sure that there will be no rigging again is to sack the guy that rigged the first one. A thief is a thief. There's no justified thief.
And in the meantime, the U.S. government has warned all parties in Kenya to avoid violence and say the whole procedure should be peaceful. David Othiano from Kenya says, East Africa is messed up. Have you seen what's happening in Rwanda, Uganda, and Kenya? Same script. Power has gotten into the heads of the heads of states.
Thank you very much for your comments. Now, moving on, a committee in Oslo has awarded the 2017 Nobel Peace Prize to the International Campaign to Abolish Nuclear Weapons, also known as ICAN. The Nobel Committee chose ICAN for reviving efforts to prohibit nuclear weapons at a time of renewed global tensions. For some reactions to the announcement, DW's Sumi Somaskanda spoke to Dan Smith, director of the Stockholm International Peace Research Institute. He starts by telling us the first thoughts he had that ICAN had won.
I think it's a very appropriate choice. I really do. I was thinking beforehand that I hoped that the committee would decide to direct attention towards the nuclear weapons issue because it has been rising up the political agenda this year in a way that we haven't seen for decades, really, because people are beginning to be aware of increasing nuclear risk. And I think that they have done it, the committee that is, have done it rather cleverly by pointing to a group, to a campaign, which is imagining a nuclear-free world, and that imagining an alternative to the risks that we see today. So I think they're to be congratulated on their choice, and ICAN is to be congratulated as very worthy recipients.
Dan, ICAN as a campaign, as you said, that's imagining a nuclear-free world. At the same time, none of the 9 known nuclear powers have signed up to a nuclear weapons ban. In that sense, what has this organization achieved?
Well, I think, first of all, they've achieved that the nuclear weapons ban is there on the political agenda. And it's true, as you say, that none of the 9 nuclear weapons states, nor many of those, for example, the NATO states, have not signed up to it. But over 120 governments worldwide have indicated their support for the treaty when it was drafted and are now considering their signatures and their eventual adherence to the treaty. So I think that is a pretty big shift. And I think what's worth emphasizing is that the campaign and the Bern Treaty and the Peace Prize Award are all encouraging at least five of those nine nuclear weapon states to do what they have signed up to do. Because under Article 6 of the Non-Proliferation Treaty from 1917, nearly half a century ago, they are committed to achieving nuclear disarmament. Now, they've gone some way towards that. There are fewer nuclear weapons today than there were at the end of the Cold War, but there's still 15,000 warheads left in the world. So there's a lot of work for those weapon states to do. And encouraging governments to do what they've already promised to do seems to me a pretty commonsensical thing to go for.
Dan Smith, director of the Stockholm International Peace Research Institute.
Now, French troops based in West Africa have deployed heavily along the Niger-Mali border after an attack by jihadists left four Nigerian troops and three US soldiers dead. Eight other Nigerians were wounded, as were two members of the US forces who are providing training to the Nigerian army on combating extremists in the region. Ineke Muse has more to this report.
During a speech at an event organised for the First Ladies of ECOWAS leaders, Mahamadou Issoufou condemned the attack and reiterated that foreign forces that have been deployed in the region to help in the fight against terrorism will not be deterred by such cowardly acts.
Notre pays vient une fois de plus.
Once more, our country has been the victim of a terrorist attack by a group of terrorists that claimed a large number of victims. Women and children pay a high price for terrorism, directly as innocent victims and indirectly as mothers and wives. They have once more lost sons and husbands.
Islamist militants form part of a growing regional insurgency in the poor, sparsely populated deserts of West Africa's Sahel. Jihadists have stepped up attacks on UN peacekeepers, Malian soldiers, and civilian targets since being driven back in northern Mali by a French-led military intervention in 2013. Malian militant groups have expanded their reach into neighbouring countries, including Niger, where a series of attacks by armed groups led the government in March to declare a state of emergency in the southwest.
Ineke Mules to that report. I'd like to welcome our listeners who are following us on Facebook Live. Our page is DW Africa. Leave your comments there and we read them. One of you is already commenting about the Kenyan story, the protest that took place in Nairobi, and that is Tochuku Onuku says Uhuru should respect himself.
Yes, and thank you also to Ansumana Bajan, who is listening from China. Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, keep the comments flowing. And Eunice, German researchers are hoping to decipher the story behind thousands of skulls brought to Germany from former African colonies, that is Rwanda, Tanzania and Namibia. The collection has been stored around Berlin for nearly a century, and many people have been calling for a thorough investigation into this story. We posted this, you know, piece on our page and you've been reacting.
Yes, and Namdi is writing from London. He says the Germans under the Nazis used Southern Africa for bizarre experiments in the early 20th century. Africans haven't forgotten and Germany must pay reparation for this horrific crime.
And Lamini Fofana Bla in Montreal, Canada says not just research but to pay Africa off for many things.
We have more comments here from Jonathan from Zambia. He says it was nothing but racist. Why did they target Africans and coloureds?
And the positive man says African Union is weak, an organisation of corrupt presidents to have refused to die. Oh, I mean, it's not so much clear about this comment. Michael Adu says, I don't think Germans should be held responsible for the atrocities of their great grandparents. However, they shouldn't repeat those mistakes with their acts of racism. And of course, we welcome your comments on other topics that we've been covering. We are seeing many of you are following us and you're clicking. Share the page, like it, comment, and always read your stories or your comments live here on Facebook. Just to remind you, a top story, protesters have been, you know, tear gassed in Kenya following, you know, demands for the Electoral Commission to be scrapped. We'll be monitoring this story from the ground. Our correspondents are in Nairobi, in Kisumu, and we'll give you updates in the coming days. Stay tuned.
This is Africa Link coming to you live from our studios here in Bonn, Germany. I'm Eunice Njiro.
And I'm Isaac Mugabe, and we're live on Facebook.
Coming up in the next 15 minutes, a Ugandan blogger speaks about social injustices in her community.
I started writing about sex workers, about the homeless, and now the current series for August and September are violence against educated women in Uganda.
And we'll also be reading you some of your comments and reactions, the topics lined up, so don't go away, there is much more to come.
Uganda's National Council of Sports has said that it will confiscate passports of athletes while on international duty following a series of disappearances. The tough resolution comes after the disappearance of national rugby players in Germany last week, barely a month after the entire team of boxers also vanished in Germany during a world championship. From Kampala, Frank Yeager reports.
Following a series of disappearances of Ugandan athletes while on international tour, the National Council of Sports has once again been thrown into the limelight for not taking good care and responsibility of athletes when they go to represent the country at international competitions. There has been mixed reactions as to why sportsmen and women choose to disappear when they seize the opportunity of taking part in international tournaments. But some of the underlying reasons are poverty and lack of state-of-the-art training equipment. For players like Sarah Tendo, the decision by the Sports Council to secure their passports is not the answer. When she is not at the rugby pitch training, Tendo is always at the car washing bay working. As a member of female national rugby team, the escape of her teammates in Germany while on international duty is a big blow to the squad. She tells me why the new measures are not good enough.
If I happen to go to Europe and I'm like, I'm disappearing, I don't need a passport, I'll disappear. Yes, you disappear. But they need to restructure what they're thinking about. Because whether they keep their passports, whether they carry these so-called delegates who are going to travel with their teams, those tourists, because what will they be doing on the team anyway? Because if we have a team manager, that is the head of the delegation, so giving us another tourist from government, that will not work.
Emmanuel Mosoke is one of the players training for the regional club basketball tournament. He also plays for the national team and frequently travels abroad for international duty. He says instead of holding their passports and monitoring their movements, the government should improve their welfare and perhaps vanishing of players will stop.
We as players have our own dreams and we can't achieve them in Uganda only. You see that? First of all, the player welfare also is not enough. No, it's not good at all. So players have to go out there and look for greener pastures.
After listening to what the players had to say as to why their comrades continue to disappear, I head straight to the National Council of Sports to seek more clarification on the new measures. Bosco Nyik, the chairman, National Council of Sports, welcomes me to his office and explains to me how they are going to prevent sportsmen and women from disappearing in the future.
If we have our own a government representative within the team, that person will be responsible for everything. At arrival at the airport, when they are cleared, it is kept with one person. Now, until when they are going back at the airport, it is given back to the individuals. That is the system we are going to employ here.
But sports enthusiasts and analysts think federations should provide more upkeep funds for sportsmen and women when on international tours and should also take care of them while at home to beat the temptation of escaping.
Frank Yeager in Kampala. Now, we asked on our social media front, aren't Ugandan authorities making the work easier for those athletes who would wish to remain abroad?
Yeah, and we have a couple of, you know, interesting comments here. The first one from Caleb Chauro says, it's going to make work easier. He used the word export. If my government exports me to a foreign land and confiscates my traveling documents, nice. This will cause more harm than good. Let Ugandan authorities think otherwise.
We also have Malik Andrew, who says the Ministry of Sports and the bodies responsible should let the athletes chase their dreams, especially if they get a chance of going abroad or staying, it should be okay, since the bodies know they don't pay the athletes good and even have no facilities they need in training.
Nzeza says they're just making it easier. Passport or no passport, if I want to stay abroad, I will.
Well, I guess the Ugandan authorities really have to consider what they're doing.
Exactly.
Sunday Igwesi from Monrovia says Ugandan authorities should ask themselves questions as to why their citizens disappear whenever they travel abroad. What a shame to African leaders who destroy the future of the youths of Africa.
And Kanjo at CN says, if athletes prefer to disappear and not come back home, then there's a problem back home. That problem is not caused by a passport, but by bad leadership.
And one last comment here. After laughing out loud, Pascal Okanimba says, he's asking, how will that not happen when our governments have decided to make our own safe havens hell?
Oh, that's, you know, repeat that. How will that not?
How will that not happen when our governments have decided to make their own safe havens hell?
Okay. So. We thank you for those comments. We'll always read them live. We appreciate. Just go to our Facebook page, DW Africa. Leave your comment there. And we'll be back right after this.
Blog report.
Let's stay in Uganda for a while to listen from this blogger, Prudence Nyamishana. She has been blogging since 2012 and writes about social injustice in Uganda. Prudence believes in being the voice of the voiceless and is certain that communication can change society. She's also an author at Global Voices and is a founding partner of Quetta Uganda. And this is uganda.org, her blog. Prudence's notes have close to 6,000 followers and close to 4,000 on Twitter. Those are the followers. DW's Jen Ayeko Kumit met her to talk about her journey into blogging and where she draws her inspiration. Enjoy.
The inspiration comes from wanting to tell other people's stories, especially unheard voices and some of the taboo stories. I launched a web of empathy and started writing about sex workers, about the homeless. And now the current series for August and September are violence against educated women in Uganda.
Well, Prudence, one of the stories that caught my attention on your blog was about a homeless boy around Kampala Road that you actually wrote about, and you went ahead to fundraise for this boy. Tell me, what does it feel like to sit there and talk to this 26-year-old boy?
It was a Sunday afternoon. I sat with him and started listening to his story, only to discover that he had been homeless for 3 years, and he had changed clothes like once in 3 years. He told me that he was losing hope. So I told him I'm going to write about him on my blog. And then we see. Since then, he's got a job. He's still on the streets, but he's working very hard.
A true reflection of blogging about social injustice. But being a voice for the voiceless, how does it translate into a job that you can live on?
Blogging in itself is very hard to live on, per se. But my blog has opened for me job opportunities. I have had daytime jobs. I've worked with a number of organizations, and I get paid for my services. And for many of the jobs that I've gone to, no one asks me for a CV anymore because they've read my blog and they know that I can actually write and do the works.
Your next series is about domestic violence among educated women in Uganda. Why this particular group?
I've had friends and relatives who went to school. And you know, there is a belief that empower the girl child, let them have money, and then everything, it's like a magic bullet. But then I ask myself, why are lawyers, teachers being abused, and why are they tolerating this? And so far, I have actually got stories. These women actually type out their stories and they send them to me. Educated women actually suffer violence even worse than those unempowered women because of the society expectations. And you know, you look glamorous on the outside, or you are holding a very big position in society, and coming out to say that a man is abusing me becomes very difficult.
Tell me about your favorite piece, the one that triggered you off into writing.
It is a story of a girl called Sheila. She was brought up by corporates. and she was abused by stepmothers again and again, and she was raped by her boss when she went to become a housemaid, and later she found herself as a prostitute. She suffers from HIV. The time I interviewed her, her friend who was also a sex worker was killed in a lodge, and she was depressed, like she was severely depressed.
That was the Ugandan blogger Prudence Nyamishana speaking to our own Jane Ayeko Comet.
And as usual on Friday, we end with sports. And today it's all about the Football World Cup qualifiers. Germany is one of the teams that have already qualified for the World Cup. So what have been the reactions? This is a question I put to Davis van Opdop from the DW Sports Desk.
Well, I think there is some relief, but I mean, Germany, of course, being the defending champions, they were expected to qualify. But those, since they've been, they haven't lost a game or even dropped a point in their qualification so far, it means it's a lot of people are still impressed by that. They haven't really been tested in their group. There's been tougher groups in qualification, but nonetheless, I mean, a perfect record is a perfect record.
Now, teams like Italy and Portugal seem to be struggling to qualify for the World Cup. What are the chances that they will actually qualify?
Well, Italy is in a tough group. They're playing against Spain, who, of course, they've been very successful at the international level. And the top team qualifies automatically. So if Italy and Spain are in the same group, then one of them is going to have to go into the playoff. They're probably going to still, unless they draw someone like Portugal, they're probably still going to go through to the World Cup. But, of course, that's not the most ideal way for a country as big as Italy to make it to the World Cup.
Now let's move away from Europe. We have other football giants like Brazil who have qualified, but Argentina is way down. It doesn't look so good for the team, despite the fact that this is Messi's team. What are the chances here?
Yeah, South America is very interesting because there's a lot of teams that are grouped together. Argentina is actually playing Ecuador on the final day. That's a game that they should be able to win. So even though they have struggled in World Cup qualification so far, they still are very likely to make it. So they're not in the top now. So a lot of people are making it a bigger deal than it is. But that final match day, I think Argentina will be where it's supposed to be, and that is in the World Cup picture.
So what are the games to actually look out for this weekend?
Well, Africa is very interesting because Cameroon is they're way behind in qualification, and they have a lot of work to do if they want to qualify for the World Cup. In Asia, Syria has drawn their first match against Australia, and Syria is interesting as well because they drew their first game in the playoff in Asia against Australia, and they play their second leg in Australia next week. And if they qualify, that's obviously a big story considering all of the conflict that has gone on in that country.
I was speaking to Davis van Opford from the DW Sports Desk.
And by the way, Eunice, just let our listeners know that Germany had a clean bill of health. You know, all the games, 9 games, it won all of them. No draws, no losses. You multiply that by 3, 27 points, meaning that the coach, Joachim Löw, went his head, you know, high after last evening's match. And England also qualified. So the first two teams to qualify for the World Cup in Russia, Germany, of course, with all the points, and England.
Very interesting. Now, Isaac, the Bundesliga here, Bayern Munich has brought back Jupp Heynckes as coach. What's your take on that?
Yeah, he said, first of all, that Bayern Munich is the only team at heart. He cannot get out of retirement for any other team. Remember, he had a treble in 2012 and 2013, winning all the trophies that were on display. And he went in retirement as, you know, a very happy, happy man. Anyway, away from sports, Eunice, Cameroon has disputed a report that said 100 people died in anti-government protests. The African Union has largely remained quiet as secession sentiments gather steam in the Central African nation. And the comments.
Yes, Francis Zamba says it is even more than 100. Bodies are still being recovered that were killed and dumped. Apart from that, hundreds of young men and women are missing. The AU, as well as CAMAC, the CEMAC, and ECOWAS are all silent. This is typical mentality in this part of the world. Well, that's a very strong comment there.
And positive man JB says African Union or the AU is weak. The organization is just quiet when, you know, mayhem is being, you know, is being carried out in Cameroon.
And Nyinguchuo Hillary, he's saying, When Nkosazana Dlamini Zuma was chairperson, the AU demonstrated interest in the Southern Cameroon's case and offered her good offices to mediate. Since the current chairperson is from Chad and close to Yaounde, we should expect little or nothing from the AU.
Yeah, many thanks for your comments. We appreciate. And on behalf of the team here in the studios, I'm Isaac Mugabe.
And I'm Eunice Wanjiro. Have a great weekend.